CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, the rumors are true. Arts County Fair has been canceled, and the Metro Vancouver Board is taking a stand against the handover of Pacific Spirit Park and University Golf Course as part of the recent urban land treaty. We'll have all this, plus arts, sports, and your five-day weather forecast coming up on this half hour right here on News 101. After 16 years of bringing music to the masses of UBC on the last day of Term 2 classes, Arts County Fair has been cancelled. The Arts Undergrad Society, which organizes and hosts the event, says that the steady decline in ACF ticket sales over the past few years is one of the main reasons they have decided to cancel the campus tradition. Producer Sarah Costa says that while the concert used to consistently draw a crowd of between 10,000 and 15,000 people each year, with one year in particular reaching a zenith of over 16,000 patrons, the AUS is now struggling to attract even 10,000 attendees. Arts County Fair has also been plagued with cost issues. While the event has raised over $150,000 for charity, it is also $50,000 in debt. Safety issues have also been cited by organizers as a main concern. Last year, a concertgoer was seriously injured after falling 6 meters from a balcony at a pre-concert party at a fraternity house. A Facebook group has been created in response to the cancellation called Bring Back Arts County Fair, with a membership of over 3,000 students and supporters. The group features links to various UBC publications with their stance on the fair's cancellation and an invitation to join in an email campaign directed at the members of the university, faculty, and student administration. Now, with a look at other local news, here are Leanne Yu and Tracy Fuller.
The Metro Vancouver Board has opposed the decision of the provincial government to transfer Pacific Spirit Regional Park to the Musqueam First Nation. The board, formerly known as the Greater Vancouver Regional District, passed a motion Friday stating that the board does not support the, quote, appropriation of local government assets for the settlement of Aboriginal claims, unquote. Board Director and Burnaby Mayor Derek Corrigan says he is unsure if the provincial government will hear the motion, as it stands in the way of the completion of their controversial deal with the Musqueam people, which was reached on November 9th. The proposed deal would give the Musqueam people control of the 50-hectare university golf course and two parcels of land totaling 22 hectares from Pacific Spirit Regional Park. David Forsyth, chair of the Pacific Spirit Park Society, is hoping that the decision of the Metro Vancouver Board will place some pressure on the provincial government to stop the handover of the park.
Store owners along Cambie Street are concerned about the cracks which have appeared in their walls, floors, and sidewalks. They blame months of Canada Line construction for the damages. Officials with the Canada Line project say many of the cracks are superficial and have not reached the building foundations. They have promised that any damages to the local businesses caused by the construction will be fixed. Local merchants have voiced concerns in the past over the impact of the Canada Line construction is having on their shops. Since the construction began, traffic restrictions along Cambie Street have meant many businesses are having trouble staying afloat. The appearance of cracks in the buildings along the Cambie Street corridor has only raised more questions on how the project is being handled by the city.
BC's Housing Minister Rich Coleman has promised that a new program, which is keeping provincial homeless shelters open 24/7, will continue even after the 2010 Olympics. Speaking this afternoon, the minister said that the province has made a permanent commitment to the program, with money already committed up to the 2010-2011 budget cycle. This follows last month's announcement by the province that they will invest $41 million to keep more than half of the region's 900 shelter beds open all day.
Paul Callow, often known as the balcony rapist, has been barred from attending the continuing education classes he had registered for at Langara College. 52-year-old Callow was convicted of raping 5 women in Toronto and served 20 years in prison. Corrections Canada notified the public of Callow's high risk to reoffend upon his release. Langara President Linda Holmes has decided, after an assessment of available resources, she could not ensure the safety or security of Callow or others while he was on the college sites. Back at UBC, Associate Vice President of Enrollment Services Brian Silzer says the university would likely not bar a student with a criminal record who had already served their time. The Langara Students Union has no official position on the matter. The union has not yet been approached by students to take a stand. Langara President Holmes has agreed to meet with Callow's lawyer.
And BC's Solicitor General has said that BC's police forces will continue to use tasers. Speaking on a Victoria talk show yesterday, John Less admitted that BC authorities are currently reviewing the utility and effectiveness of the device, but he insisted that tasers are safe. Less says that all of the studies that have been conducted so far have indicated that the taser is a safe device when used correctly. Preliminary results of the Solicitor General's review will be released on December 12th. Less thinks that that taking tasers away from police before that time would be wrong and risky. The Solicitor General's comments come on the heels of another taser-related death in BC. 36-year-old Robert Knindstrom of Chilliwack died earlier Saturday morning, 6 days after RCMP officers subdued him with a taser following an alleged hit-and-run incident. The taser debate continues to be a hot topic in Vancouver since the death of Polish immigrant Robert Tachinski at Vancouver's International Airport on October 14, 2007. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Hi guys, I'm here to tell you about an exciting social and educational event called The Night of 1,000 Dinners. N1KD is an event held by the International Relations Students Association in order to raise funds and awareness for the campaign against landmines. The evening is a chance for students, diplomats, and members of the business community to come together and enjoy an exceptional meal while discussing and learning about the global landmine crisis. Our dinner has the prestige of being one of the largest student-organized nights of 1,000 dinners in the world. Please join us on November 27th at 6 p.m. at the Marriott Pinnacle in downtown Vancouver. Tickets are on sale now. They're running out very quickly. To purchase, please visit the URSA website at ursa.ca/gala.
Boy, I'm glad we paid our electric bill.
Electricity is our servant in many ways.
Uh-oh, here we go again.
Oh, Terry, I'm interested. Where does electricity come from, Jasper?
I'm sorry I mentioned it.
Well, electricity can come from many places, from many different sources of power, like hydroelectric power.
Hydroelectric?
Hydro means water. Water power to make electricity.
Want to learn more? Join Team PowerSmart. Visit bchydro.com/teampowersmart to make a difference and conserve today. Influence the future of energy conservation in BC by entering BC Hydro's Innovation Challenge, open exclusively to participating post-secondary institutions in BC. You could win one of three cash prizes. Visit bchydro.com/innovationchallenge before November 30th to find out more.
You can join for free, and kids in every neighborhood belong. It's a funny company, cause it's just for fun, you see. So come a running when you hear our song.
All you people care about is readers and making money off of her. She's a human! Leave Brittany alone!
If you don't want to miss your favorite CITR show because it makes fun of the spiel, then you've got nothing to worry about. Now you can get all of the CITR 101.9 FM radio shows off our website and download them straight onto your computer or MP3 players. Just visit www.citr.ca/podcast and dive into a pool of all of the past radio shows, such as...
Because all you people want is more, 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 more! Leave her alone!
All to your little heart's desire.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:12. According to a report by Statistics Canada, BC is behind the rest of the country when it comes to addressing the issue of child poverty. With more on that and other stories, we're joined in studio again by News 101 reporters Tracy Fuller, Leanne Yu, and Carrie Baptist.
Statistics Canada has released a new report stating BC has the highest child poverty rate in the country. The report, written by the BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition, was based on the most up-to-date available income numbers from 2005. Despite BC's economic well-being, findings show about 21%, or one out of five children in the province, live in poverty. The national average was just under 17%. This is the fourth consecutive year BC has ranked last. Coalition chairperson Michael Goldberg suggests BC come up with a child poverty reduction plan. He adds similar programs have been implemented in Newfoundland and Quebec to much success. Coalition spokesperson Adrian Montani says that what's most disturbing is BC fares the worst for families where at least one parent is working full-time all year. Montani says this means parents are working for very low wages and are not able to raise their kids in an inclusive fashion in society. To combat this, she suggests raising minimum wage to $10.50 an hour.
An advocacy group is voicing its concern about the government's delayed decisions of whether or not to upgrade Canada's aging fleet of Aurora patrol aircraft. Friends of Maritime Aviation says it seems as though the government is not committed to one of its priorities of defending Canada's Arctic sovereignty. The group says the decision of whether or not to continue upgrades to the Aurora fleet has been postponed. Some are speculating that the postponement indicates a government plan to scrap further upgrades. Friends of Maritime Aviation says these postponements will compromise Canada's ability to protect its Arctic sovereignty. Some have speculated the move comes as a response to exhausted resources for the Afghanistan mission. The government has spent over $900 million upgrading the CP-140 Aurora's radar and navigation systems so far. Defense contractors were preparing for the next round when plans were put on hold.
Prime Minister Stephen Harper is denying Liberal Party accusations that Canada's position on climate change at the recent Commonwealth Summit in Uganda were not only, quote, isolated, unquote, but a national embarrassment as well. Harper says his position to push for all countries to adhere to binding targets on greenhouse gas emissions instead of only industrialized countries was the, quote, only right, unquote, position to be taken on the issue. Other Commonwealth leaders were not so pleased, including Malaysian Prime Minister Abdullah Ahmad Badawi, who was, quote, a little bit disappointed, unquote, with Canada's position on the issue, saying that he hoped some of the Commonwealth's developed nations would take a leading role on the issue. Harper continued by saying the, quote, strong and clear position, unquote, taken by the Conservatives is exactly the position outlined in last month's speech from the throne, which was passed by the Liberals. Discussion on the issue of global carbon restrictions will continue at next month's UN Climate Change Conference in Bali, Indonesia.
Members of Canada's First Nations community are outraged that the federal government has decided to pay their own legal fees before paying them their financial compensation for the abuses they suffered in Canada's residential schools. The $45.6 million legal bill, one of the largest in Canadian legal history, has been paid to a slew of lawyers in Alberta and Ontario involved in the class action suit. However, more than 50,000 former students involved in the lawsuit are still waiting for their payments from Ottawa, with the entire package totaling $2 billion. Over the past 20 years, more than 12,000 former students have filed lawsuits against the federal government and churches who ran the infamous schools. An overwhelming majority of claims cite alleged physical and sexual abuse by school staff and an irreplaceable loss of language and culture.
And on to international news. It is difficult to conceive that the leading cause of death among women in Italy is domestic violence. This weekend, a national rally kicked off a campaign aimed at pressuring the Italian government into passing a law to protect women from such an unbearable fate. FSRN's Diletta Farlis reports from Rome.
Violence against women by their partners and family members is the leading cause of death for women in Italy. A national rally in Rome this weekend marked the beginning of a campaign to pressure the government to adopt a law that better protects women from violence. FSRN's Diletta Varlesi reports.
62 women have been murdered by men often close to them in Italy since the beginning of the year. Statistics show that violence, especially committed by intimate partners, kills more women each year in Italy than cancer.
I've been to the police so many times to tell them that my daughter was being kept in captivity by this boy, that I couldn't see her. They answered that she was grown up enough to decide whether she wanted to see us or not. I told them he was going to kill her. I knew she was going to be killed.
Sara Multari's daughter, Maria Antonia, was stabbed 44 times by her ex-boyfriend in the streets of Sanremo City on the 10th of August.
The police told me I was exaggerating, but I had uncovered this guy's history. He had several prior convictions. He had been accused of homicide and the rape of another woman. I found this on the internet. They said they were aware of him, that he was under police surveillance, and that I should just stay calm, that he couldn't lay a finger on her. Well, he didn't lay a finger on her. He stabbed her 44 times with a knife. He killed my daughter like a dog in the middle of the street.
During the first 10 months of 2007, there were 141 attempts on women's life. 1,805 women were raped. More than 10,000 were seriously assaulted, beaten, burned, head bones broken. Usciamo dal Silenzio, or Escape Silence, is one of the organizations working to raise national awareness of the problem. Spokesperson Silvia Glisenti says the violence has deep roots in the society, and it is made worse by the complicity of police and security organizations.
The statistics are clear. 75% of violence against women is perpetrated by fathers, husbands, ex-partners, and male relatives. The Italian Institute for Statistics also finds that this violence usually occurs in a woman's home. This cannot go on anymore. But institutions and politicians manipulate it as a security problem and not a cultural problem that needs a deep educational change.
Glisenti is referring to the murder in Rome 2 weeks ago of Giovanna Reggiani. She was killed by a man from Romania and her body left in a field. The Prodi government's response was to rush through a special decree to expel EU citizens who are in Italy without a valid work contract. The Women's Association rallying in Rome said the government is dodging the real issue of violence against women and instead using the situation to further its own political interests. On Saturday, about 150,000 women rallied to demand that the government draft a new law that will protect women from physical and psychological violence. They hold up a Spanish law against gender violence adopted by Zapatero government shortly after his election as an example of an effective law. Barbara Pollastrini is Minister for Equal Opportunities in Prodi's administration.
What I believe is that the Parliament lacks sensitivity to this issue. In a European context, Italy is more or less the same as other countries in the number of violent events. What we really need are proper laws, swifter justice, and more severe punishment. I believe there's a laziness in male politicians, a strong conservatory, and the idea that family violence is something private and not public.
Organizers of the rally say this is just a first step to call attention and make concrete steps ahead. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Diletta Varlese in Brescia, Italy.
It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Jeff Sargent will tell us what's happening in UBC Athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
That's right. This is not the Thunderdome, folks. This is real roller derby action. Check it out.
Need your monthly fix of girls hitting each other on skates? Well, it's your lucky day. We practice once a month, and we want you to come and watch. You like to watch, don't you? the Terminal City Roller Girls Monthly Scrimmage, Sunday, December 2nd from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the UBC Osborne Center, 6108 Thunderbird Boulevard, Unit 2. Bring a warm jacket. Despite the hot roller derby action, it can get pretty cold in there. And don't forget, we want to have more places to hold events in Vancouver, so we're still saving up for that darn sport court floor. We'll pass the hat at intermission, so any kind donations would be much appreciated. The Terminal City Roller Girls Monthly Scrimmage, Sunday, December 2nd, 2007, at the UBC Osborne Center.
Sometimes I feel special, like an apostle of Jesus or something.
And how does that make you feel?
Like I want to hustle!
Yes, I see.
You don't need a psychologist to know that what you crave is Apostle of Hustle, the ultimate indie rock band. CITR presents Apostle of Hustle Saturday, December 8th at the Plaza Club on Granville Street. Come out for a chance to hear them play new music from their album National Anthem of Nowhere.
That'll cure anybody.
A professional opinion would be to recommend Apostle of Hustle. Yes.
Are you a UBC student taking first-year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa! How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa! When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa! A plus, here I come.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Rita Farkas, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:23, and time for a look back at this past weekend in UBC athletics. Here's Jeff Sargent with Thunderbird Ion Sports.
The UBC men's basketball team had yet another successful homestand on the weekend, sweeping their two-game series against Thompson Rivers University. The lowly Wolfpack, who sit at the bottom of the Canada West Pacific Division, gave the Thunderbirds a run for their money Friday night, coming to within 5 points of UBC's lead in the third quarter. But the scare was short-lived as the Birds went on to a 101-81 victory, setting up Saturday night's rematch. Unfortunately for the Wolfpack, UBC started out where they left off, cruising to the easy 110-72 win, and remain now in first place in the Pacific. The Thunderbirds got off to a 15-2 start in the first and never looked back, scoring the highest point total of any team in the Canada West this season. UBC forward Bryson Cool led the floor in scoring with 26 points on the night, with 11 rebounds good for the double-double. Chris Dick added 22 points and was a perfect 4-for-4 from the free throw line. Despite the blowout wins, Cool gives credit to the Wolfpack for battling hard.
Thompson Rivers is a very aggressive team. You know, they're kind of like Trinity Western in the sense that they never give up, no matter what the point differential is. But no, give credit to them. They fought hard the past couple games.
After the pair of wins, the Birds sit with a 9-1 record, just 2 points ahead of the Victoria Vikes, who they take on this weekend for a two-game series at War Memorial Gym. The women's basketball team also enjoyed a winning weekend, sweeping their two-game series against the Wolfpack as well. Friday night, the Birds dominated Thompson Rivers, posting a 79-42 win for their biggest margin of victory so far this season. Saturday night's rematch was no contest once again, as UBC outscored the Wolfpack 19-11 in the fourth quarter, en route to the 70-49 win, improving the Thunderbirds' record to 9-1. That's good for second place in the Pacific Division behind the Simon Fraser Clan. Fifth-year guard Kate Haggerty led all players in scoring Saturday with 15 points, while Erica McGinnis and Devin Lisson had 11 points each. Haggerty said the Wolfpack did give the Birds some surprises, including a strong effort on rebounds, but it was nothing they couldn't handle.
They crashed the boards really hard, and maybe we weren't really expecting them to do that. I think it could have been a lot of factors, but it's definitely stuff that was within our control.
Next up for the Lady Birds is a visit by the Victoria Vikes this weekend before both the women's and men's teams take a break for the holidays and return back to action in January. After an impressive 6-2 start to the regular season, the UBC men's hockey team has suddenly found itself at the .500 mark after dropping back-to-back games in Edmonton over the weekend. The Alberta Golden Bears scored 4 goals in the third period Saturday to down UBC 6-2, following up on a 3-2 come-from-behind win on Friday. After dropping 5 of their last 6, the Birds now sit 4th in the Canada West standings with a record of 7-7. UBC assistant coach Tyler Kuntz on the team's struggle after a great start.
I think when we got ranked there, we got ranked number 4. We were sitting at 6-2, and we were coming against Manitoba at home. I think we were a little too jacked up, and Manitoba came from behind 3-1, and they just killed us. You know, I don't think we were ready that weekend at all. We were just underprepared.
The Birds will play their final games before the Christmas break this coming weekend when they host the 4-10 Lethbridge Pronghorns for a twin bill. We'll have the Saturday contest for you right here on CITR beginning at 7:30. The women's hockey team enjoyed a much-deserved weekend off after a big 3-point weekend against the Alberta Pandas in Edmonton. After a tough 0-6 start to the season, the Thunderbirds have now won 3 of their last 6 games and sit with a 3-8-1 record, 7 points out of a playoff spot. The Ladybirds are back in action this weekend with a 2-game home series against the Lethbridge Pronghorns, and head coach Dave Newson says it's crucial his team enters the winter break on a high note.
Lethbridge has been an improving team, and you know, we got to get those 2 wins heading into the break here, and then we get the chance to really build on things over the course of the time off, and we have to have a real good run in the second half because in spite of our good games against Alberta, Saskatchewan's ahead of us in the standings, and they keep on winning too, so it's going to be a dogfight right to the end to get the playoff spot.
While the playoffs are still not out of reach for UBC, the Birds will have to play 600 hockey or better following the break if they wish to make the postseason for the 2nd consecutive year. There's very little standing in the way of the UBC women's volleyball team right now. Danielle Peterson registered 10 kills, while Carla Bradstock had 34 assists to lead the number 2-ranked Thunderbirds to a 3-set win over the Regina Cougars Saturday night. UBC prevailed by scores of 25-23, 25-20, and 25-18 to sweep the 2-match weekend series after taking the Friday meeting in 3 straight as well. The 2 victories improve UBC's record to 8-1 in conference play, just 1 win behind the conference-leading Manitoba Bisons, the team responsible for the Birds' only loss so far. The Lady Birds are now off until the new year, with their next conference match taking place January 5th when they host crosstown rival Simon Fraser at War Memorial Gym. That's a 4:30 p.m. start, and we'll have the webcast of that for you on our website, citr.ca. The men's volleyball team was off this past weekend, giving them extra time to prepare for a big road trip to the University of Brandon on Friday and Saturday. The men have also done well for themselves so far this season, going 6-2 in conference play and earning the number 3 spot in the national rankings. UBC is tied for 2nd in the Canada West with the Winnipeg Westmen, just 1 win back of the Alberta Golden Bears. Well, we have a big weekend in store for you on CITR Sports as we wrap up our 2007 schedule. On Friday, we have the first meetings of the season between UBC and the Victoria Vikes in Canada West basketball. Our coverage begins at 5:45 p.m. with tip-off of the women's game at 6, followed by the men at 8. Then on Saturday, we're webcasting the rematches for both the men and the women over at War Memorial Gym. While on air, we'll bring you men's hockey between UBC and Lethbridge as the Birds look to enter the Christmas break above the 500 mark. A full schedule can be found on our website, citr.ca. That's a look at your UBC Thunderbird sports for this Monday. I'm Jeff Sargent.
And thank you, Jeff. So we're now going to go to our meteorologist, Selena Ferris, with your 5-day weather forecast.
Be prepared for a cold week. The current frontal system will be passing overnight, and conditions should clear up by Tuesday afternoon. But the rain and possible flurries will roll back in on Wednesday, with lows down to 0. Conditions will begin to clear for the end of the week, with a high of 5 on Thursday and down to 2 on Friday. That's your weekend weather, brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. Don't forget to check out our bake sale on Wednesday in the EOS building, where proceeds will go to victims of Cyclone Sidar.
Thank you, Selena. I can't believe it's actually happening out there. The snow is really coming from the sky.
I know. Seems to be a little bit of slush on the ground at UBC here.
Yeah, I guess all those people who are just visiting Vancouver for their first winter are getting a taste of the slushy winter weather we often experience.
Our very wet snow, yeah.
Yes. Thanks. So that's our program for November 26, 2007. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Rita Farkas thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings, coming up next on 101.9 FM, CITR.